Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. We're going to talk about selenium helping to fight precancer cervical conditions. From Erech University Medical Center in Iran. We're going to talk about Johns Hopkins University's latest on hospitals may sicken many by withholding food and sleep. We're going to look at more than one-third of cancers can be avoided if Australians modify their lifestyle. From a major study of 40,000 people who were studied down there and published in Australian and New Zealand Journal of Public Health. By the way, we have over 62,000 people listening to this program in India alone. In every country you can imagine around the world, people are listening. So we're trying to give information that helps everyone, everywhere. Also, there's an herb. It's called the heal-all herb. And it has incredible benefits for your brain. And so this is from Kyung Ho University in Korea. And a lot more on health and healing, always state-of-the-art, but ahead of the curve. Then we're going to look at Americans are sending trash to landfills twice as fast as what we thought, and quite simply, we're running out of landfills. We don't have enough places to put our stuff. Also, the fact that you hear someone on television or radio or read about them, and they generally are a highly respected academic, doesn't mean that they are unbiased. A new study that I'll reveal today from the University of Pittsburgh School of Public Health Sciences shows that many nonprofit academic leaders, those are the ones you frequently see on television, serve on profit healthcare company boards. Well, that's a conflict of interest. You mean someone's appearing on a television program, maybe on PBS or NPR, saying, yes, we need to protect the children by vaccinating them, and Gardasil is an important vaccine to give them. It can help prevent cervical cancer. And because this person is maybe a professor of pediatrics, a lot of published articles, we accept that that person must know the science, therefore be far wiser than we would. Not true. That person received a lot of money to make those statements. And Gardasil is one of the most, if not the most, dangerous vaccine ever invented. Oh, and did we forget? It's never been proven, ever, not once, to prevent cervical cancer. And if you doubt me, send me the articles. I've looked at every single scientific study on Gardasil. I interviewed the developer of Gardasil. I've interviewed the toxicologist professors and immunologists. None of them can show me that it prevents cervical cancer. They have a mathematical probability model, an artificial construct. That is not proof of anything. Today also, a commentary from John Whitehead from Op-Ed News. We are the government. Tactics for taking down the police state. New evidence that antidepressants are causing an epidemic of violence. From the British Medical Journal, no less. It's not often that you hear someone stand up in a legislative body and tell the full truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, irrespective of how it might impact their political party or their own careers. We're going to share a few of those insights today. John F. Kennedy, in a speech you have not heard about the secret society. Did you know that he knew that there was a secret society and he called them out? John F. Kennedy was probably killed in part because of this knowledge and what he intended to do about it. The link between mass shootings and antidepressants, I've said many times, we are a nation of 300 million guns. We have not had the violence against American citizens ever in our school system the way we have it today, but we also didn't have something more important than the guns. We didn't have the antidepressants, the antipsychotics. There was an instance where I spoke with my friend Michael Moore, and I said, Michael, I'd like you to look at something. And I showed him a pre-release series of interviews that I had filmed for Bowling for from Columbine in Colorado, the mass shooting. The difference is his film, Bowling for Columbine, never mentioned the drugs. Mine never mentioned the guns. I focused upon what Harry Caris had done prior to the shooting, taken the antipsychotics. He watched that. He then asked to be filmed, and I filmed him. You can see that in Prescription for Disaster. You can see a separate interview in Drugging of Our Children where he goes on record to his credit, and I respect him for this, and acknowledged the role that the medications have in precipitating violence. Why is it that nowhere do you have in any of the media an acknowledgement that this, all of these killers, every single one, no matter what their race or age, were all on some form of psychiatric medication and had histories of psychotic behavior? So why aren't we blaming the drugs? Why aren't we taking the drugs away from kids? That is the problem that'll be addressed. Also, President Eisenhower, he warned of the military-industrial complex in his farewell speech. What did he say? In the Council of Government, we must guard against the military-industrial complex. So who controls America today? The think tanks. And who do they support? The military-industrial complex. And which group spends more money than any other group in the United States? The military-industrial complex. And which group has caused us to be at the abyss trying to create and stoke a new Cold War with Russia or China or Iran? The military-industrial complex. We'll hear what President Eisenhower had to say. Also, my guest today in the second part of our program is Mickey Weinstein. We're going to talk about the evangelicization of the U.S. military and how it affects America's religious, pluralistic landscape. And by the way, he is the attorney and the founder and president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, the nation's foremost watchdog organization to assure members of the U.S. Armed Forces are guaranteed their constitutional religious freedoms and to challenge the coercive and harmful infiltration of the Christian fundamentalist groups into the military. It'll be an interesting discussion. Let's begin. We know that hospitals can save lives if you have an emergency. They're certainly the best place if you have anything that is requiring acute emergency care, a heart attack, a stroke, a severed finger, a burn, you know, a car accident. We do exemplary work there. Where a hospital is not good, the last place you should be is if you need chronic care. It was about 9 months ago, 10 months ago, that one of my closest friends passed away, Dr. Martin Feldman. And when I was asking for the details of what happened, I believe, it is my belief, studying the facts as I could piece them together, that waiting for hour upon hour upon hour upon hour upon in the hospital emergency section with no water, no food, contributed to the heart attack that he had. And this is not uncommon. It's very common. This is from Johns Hopkins University, published in the British Medical Journal, Quality and Safety. Quote, a Johns Hopkins surgeon and prominent patient safety researchers is calling on hospitals to reform emergency room surgical and other medical protocols that sicken up to 50% of already seriously ill patients, in some cases severely. with preventable and potentially dangerous bouts of food and sleep deprivation. The Dr. Martin Markey is a co-author of the Protocols to End the Practice of Imposing Needlessly Long Fasts on Patients Preparing for Operations and to Improve Sleep Quality in Those Recovering from Such Procedures. Quote, surgeries takes a huge physiological toll on the body and forcing sick people, especially the elderly who are already in a frail state, to fast for 8 to 12 hours or even days before surgery only amplifies the stress on the body. Well, it's about time someone stood up and told the truth that has been so self-evident to nurses and other physicians for a long time. The entire protocol of what to do by dehydrating the body, and people are frequently dehydrated, should be stopped. And this should be remembered the next time you go into a hospital. Because a lot of people are dying because they're malnourished or they're dehydrated. And then they're told, don't eat and don't drink. Not a good situation. So finally, it's on the record. Good. Something else is on the record. From the conversation, quote, nearly 40,000 cancers diagnosed in Australia can be prevented if people avoid known risk factors. What are the top listing items to get rid of if you want to prevent cancer? This is in Australia. From the Australian and New Zealand Journal of Public Health, the study showed that ultraviolet radiation, there's your sun. Body weight, there's your being overweight. Diet, there's your processed foods, your fried foods, your high acidic foods, alcohol in any amount, contributed to, quote, 90% of all preventable cancers. Including in here, get rid of the red and processed meats. And that's a big, big increase your intake of vegetables. Increase your intake of fruit. Increase physical activity. And these are the things that they're saying to do, things that the rest of the world knew. Why did it take this long for them to come up with this? Well, good, they finally have. So one way you can now watch a commercial on television where you get your fish and chips, or you get your steak and lobster, and you get your beer or alcohol, just remember that all contributes to cancer. So now you'll have information that allows you to know that that is propaganda, that is advertising, that is brainwashing, that is conditioning you to want, to desire, and to feel deprived if you don't have those things, even when they cause disease. At least you have the truth balancing that out if you choose to engage it. From the Iraq University Medical Sciences in Iran, published in the British Journal of Nutrition, long-term consumption of selenium supplements may help reverse the progression of the precancer condition cervical neoplasia, grade A. Well, that's cervical cancer. How much? 200 micrograms a day. They measured 200 micrograms a day of selenium against a placebo for 6 months, and there was a substantial difference in the outcome when you took selenium. So they can help prevent the progression of invasive cervical carcinoma by up to 50%. That's important. Selenium, that's just one item, but it makes a difference. Now, what is the one single item in your diet, one of everything you consume, that in women can precipitate fibrocystic breast and endothelial overgrowth, exacerbate endometriosis, cause cervical bleeding, and can lead to cervical cancer? One item, coffee. Get rid of all coffee, and in the period of time, watch a difference. Now, from a Hyung-hee University in Korea, this is it's a common herb there. It's called the heal, H-E-A-L, all herb. And a new study shows that it can help with cognition. This is a new study, quote, New data from scientists from the university indicated that 2 weeks of taking Heal All extract was found to directly or indirectly activate the NMDA receptor nerve cells, which is linked to synaptic plasticity changes. Quote, the results of the present study demonstrate that the subchronic administration of the standardized ethanolic extract of Prunella vulgaris var enhanced cognitive performance in the passive avoidance task of normal naive mice, end quote, published in the journal Phytotherapy Research. To our knowledge, quote, the present study marks the first report of the key role in cognitive improvement resulting from adult hippocampal neurogenesis and the activation of various signaling cascades. Now, in lay language, I just wanted to show you the science behind it in case there's doctors, nurses, people listening who would say, well, how do we know that an herb? I'm showing you this is good science, published in peer-reviewed journals, done at a major medical university, passing all the standards for quality science and not junk science. And here's what they say. There is an herb. I'm going to give you the proper name. P-R-U-N-E-L-L-A. Prunella. Prunella. P-R-U-N-E-L-L-A. Vulgaris. V-U-L. Vulgaris. G-A-R-I-S. V-U-L. G-A-R-S. And that's its technical name. But it's also called the self-heal herb. It's well known all over Korea. So for those who have dementia, memory loss, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, it could help. And finally, the healing power of the potency of umbachi. Umbachi is a plum. It's a little bitter, a little salty, and it's spelled U-M-E-B-O-S-H-I. Umbachi. Quote, far from being the harmless wonder drugs they are often portrayed to, antibiotics have opened the door to a whole host of problems, from the creation of superbugs to dangerous allergic reactions. It's no wonder people are turning to the healing power of natural alternatives like umbachi. This is from Natural Health. Quote, this is truly a superfood. The umbachi is often referred to as the salty plum, but it's actually a species of apricot frequently served dried or pickled. It is prized as a natural antibiotic and a healing food, a super healing food, widely consumed by the Japanese and Chinese in various forms. Today, its healing power is finally being discovered in the Western world, and especially as there's growing concerns over the overuse of conventional antibiotics. The powerful umbachi is a natural route to prevention of many illnesses, including the flu. Its secret is the alkalizing effect it has on the body, despite its own acidity, but that's similar to a lemon. It may seem counterintuitive, but it's worth noting that most fresh vegetable juices are acidic, yet drinking them helps to alkalize the body. For example, I take lemon and ginger and green apple every morning. That's acidic, but it creates alkalinity in the body. But if you drink any alcohol, it creates acidity in the body. That's why you end up with pain. And that's why people with conditions such as gout should never drink wine. You drink wine, you're exacerbating the purines, and you're going to end up with pain in your joints. In any case, for centuries, many forms of oriental medicine approached illnesses, not in terms of the many types of bacteria and viruses that cause them, but in terms of body condition. And the pickled umbachi is very effective in reversing most of the common improper body chemistry. In healthy people, your blood and body fluids are slightly alkaline. In most cases, chronic illnesses occur when the body grows too acidic. And the umbachi is effective in restoring the body's natural acid-alkaline balance, promoting health and protecting us from chronic disease. The result is a natural way to fight fatigue, avoid digestive upset. If you have an upset stomach, it's great. Diarrhea, it's good. Constipation is good. And even promoting detoxification of the body. So it's also known in the Far East as the natural approach if you want something like an aspirin. But there, they use this or the apple. And they use it for people who've drank alcohol also, because it can alleviate those symptoms of hangover, but it also alleviates symptoms of asthma and helps fight flu symptoms. And possibly the greatest benefit is it's a natural antibiotic. We've known this for decades, over 70 years. It's been known to be a natural antibiotic. Now, when I first came to the city, it was the leading natural way of helping the body. You would take mbachi plum. At that time, they came in little jars. You would cut off a little piece of it, like maybe an eighth of a teaspoon, and you would blend that into some brown rice and eat it. Or you could put it into miso soup, which made it even more powerful because the miso soup also is a natural antibiotic, providing probiotics to the body. So you really helped yourself if you had had antibiotics and your body was taking a beating. So that's how we can fight it and the flu and a lot of other conditions. Inexpensive, easy to find. It's in every health food store. That's our health and nutrition report. Now, going over to our public health report before we take our first break. This is from the Alliance for Natural Health. An article published in the British Medical Journal explains why the link is stronger than previously thought. New evidence that antidepressants are causing an epidemic of violence. Research by dozens of different cases, high-profile cases of violence over the past few decades, we have found that in just under half of the cases, 11 out of 23, the perpetrator was documented to be taking or had recently stopped taking some form of antidepressant or antipsychotic medication. In another 7 cases, the killer had been on these meds earlier. And mind you, when you go off a med, especially an antipsychotic med, your body just doesn't go back to normal in a day or a week or a month, even a year. So you have to contribute that also. And in fact, in a Mother Jones article, they looked at all mass shootings from 1982 through 2015. 72 instances of mass killings. The majority of these perpetrators have been diagnosed with symptoms of mental illness prior to the crime, and they were given antidepressants and antipsychotic drugs. And last evening on the Progressive Commentary Hour, I had probably the world's best expert on this, a man who used to head the Library of Sciences at Harvard Medical School, and a man named Robert Whittaker. And he did a long research, 13 years, and as he demonstrated completely last night, every major study showed that these drugs don't work, first off. They're not working, and when you get off the drugs, you frequently improve or never took the drugs a lot better than those who were on them. So the takeaway message is that there's an awful lot of drugs that we're taking that can cause people to hurt themselves or kill others. It's time we took a look at that. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. I loaded 16 tons, a number 9 coal, and the straw boss said, well, bless my soul, you load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. We have a lot more to give you, and we're going to have a series of short clips, audio clips, to give you insights into different issues, the human condition today that we should pay attention to, and we are not. I would like to share this commentary. This is from John Whitehead from Op-Ed News, and we've posted it. It's called "We Are the Government: Tactics for Taking Down the Police State." Quote, "The people have the power. All we have to do is awaken that power in the people." John Lennon said that. Saddled with a corporate media that marches in lockstep with the government, elected officials who dance to the tune of their corporate benefactors, and a court system that serves to maintain order rather than mete out justice, Americans often feel as if they have no voice and no recourse when it comes to holding government officials accountable and combating rampant corruption and injustice. We're impotent in the face of SWAT teams that break down doors and leave toddlers scarred for life. We're helpless to prevent police shootings that leave unarmed citizens dead for no other reason than the police officer felt threatened. And we're defenseless against a barrage of laws that render virtually anything and everything a crime nowadays, like feeding birds, growing vegetables in your front lawn, to such an extent that if a prosecutor, police officer, judge were so inclined, you could be locked up for any reason whatsoever. This is tyranny dressed up in the official garb of the police state. It is the self-righteous, heavy-handed arm of the law being used as a decoy to divert your attention to the so-called criminals in their midst. And here is the issue, and one we should pay attention to. We're not focused upon the real criminal behavior being perpetrated by the government. So how do you not only push back against the police state's bureaucracy, corruption, and cruelty, but also launch a counter-revolutionary aim at reclaiming control over the government using nonviolent means? You start by changing the rules and engaging in them, nonviolent guerrilla tactics. Employ militant nonviolent resistance and civil disobedience, which Martin Luther King Jr. and Gandhi used to great effect through the use of sit-ins, boycotts, and marches. Take part in grassroots activism, which takes a trickle-up approach to government reform by implementing change at the local level. In other words, think nationally, act locally. And then, while you're at it, nullify everything that the government does that is illegitimate, egregious, or blatantly unconstitutional. Various cities and states have been using this historic doctrine with mixed results on issues as wide-ranging as gun control and health care. Where nullification can be particularly powerful, however, is in the hands of the juror. According to former federal prosecutor Paul Butler, the doctrine of jury nullification is, quote, premised on the idea that ordinary citizens, not government officials, should have the final say as to whether persons should be punished. Imagine that. A world where the laws of the land reflect the concerns of the citizenry as opposed to the profit-driven priorities of corporate America. Unfortunately, with every ill inflicted upon us by the American police state, from over-criminalization and surveillance to militarized police and private prisons, it's money that drives the police state. And there's a lot of money to be made from criminalizing nonviolent activities and jailing Americans for nonviolent offenses. It is my personal opinion that Americans should never be jailed for nonviolent offenses. There's so many more ways to have that person work within communities that need help, so at least the person is not in a prison environment to be raped, brutalized, become a member of a gang, and then come back into the society as a raging person looking for vengeance. We're too smart. We have too many needs not to help society by having people who did something that was wrong but were nonviolent, and that saves the person, their family, and us in most cases. They would prefer that we remain clueless about the government's many illicit activities, ignorant about our constitutional rights, and powerless to bring about any real change. Indeed, so determined are they to keep us in the dark about the powers vested in we the people that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 1895 that jurors had no right during trials to be told about nullification. Moreover, anyone daring to educate a jury about nullification clearly protected by the First Amendment runs a risk of prosecution. Just recently, for example, a 56-year-old person was charged with 7 counts of jury tampering for handing out jury nullification flyers outside of a Denver courtroom. In an age in which government officials accused of wrongdoing are treated with general leniency, while the average citizen is prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, jury nullification is a powerful reminder that, as the Constitution tells us, we the people are the government. For too long, we've allowed our so-called representatives to call the shots. Now it's time to restore the citizenry to their rightful place in the republic so we are not we are not to be treated by anything less than as equal citizens. Jury nullification is one way of doing it. The reality with which we could use this is entirely possible so that we no longer putting innocents or people of nonviolent nature in prison. They may not know what the Constitution says. Studies have shown Americans to be abysmally ignorant about their rights. They may not know what the laws are. There are so many on the books that the average American breaks 3 laws a day without knowing it. And they may not even believe in their innocence. But if you're lucky that you will have a conscience that speaks louder than the legalistic tones of the prosecutors and the judges and reminds them that justice and fairness go hand in hand. That's ultimately what jury nullification is all about, restoring a sense of fairness to our system of justice. It's the best protection we the people against their oppression and tyranny of the government can use. Most of all, jury nullification is a powerful way to remind the government, all of those bureaucrats who have appointed themselves judge, jury, and jailer, over all of us, that we the people should be the ones who rule, not them. Let me now share a few people's comments on this. Let's start with hearing from President John F. Kennedy about the secret society.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program. For from that scrutiny comes understanding. And from that understanding comes support or opposition. And both are necessary. I am not asking your newspapers to support an administration, but I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. For I have complete confidence. And the response and dedication of our citizens, whenever they are fully informed. I not only could not stifle controversy among your readers, I welcome it. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. For as a wise man once said, an error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors, and we expect you to point them out when we miss them. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed, and no republic can survive. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. And that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution, not primarily to amuse and entertain, not to emphasize the trivial and the sentimental, not to simply give the public what it wants, but to inform, to arouse, to reflect, to state our dangers and our opportunities, to indicate our crises and our choices, to lead, mold, educate, and sometimes even anger public opinion. This means greater coverage and analysis of international news. For it is no longer far away and foreign, but close at hand and local. It means greater attention to improved understanding of the news, as well as improved transmission. And it means, finally, that government at all levels must meet its obligation to provide you with the fullest possible information outside the narrowest limits of national security. And so it is to the printing press, to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Now, that was over 50 years ago that President Kennedy made those statements, talking about the corrupt nature of the secret government. He was talking about the CIA, he was talking about the FBI, he was talking about the programs that he knew were in existence because his brother was Attorney General. He knew about all the clandestine efforts. Isn't it interesting what he was talking about? Open, transparent, honest government. And we have none of that today in any agency of government or any of the halls of government or any of the politicians, with a few exceptions. And so it is still a timeless insight for us. And that brings me to an issue before we go to some other topics. That one of the reasons that Progressive Radio Network and this program in particular have been able to reach as many people as we do on a daily basis is because we look for the truth wherever it is. And in that effort, we try to write articles. We post articles from other people who are doing good work but who may not have the outreach. And we produce documentaries that we're constantly, just yesterday, filming in Denmark for a new important documentary coming up. And we do special investigative reports and white papers. And then we put those out over the air for people with the hope that to make positive change, you first have to be informed. You have to put it through a litmus test, an acid test. Is it true? Is it objective? Is it important? Does it empower me? Does it give me options? And that's what this information does. Joining me in studio is one of our scholars in residence, Richard Gale, and also the program director for the Progressive Radio Network, Jason. Richard, let's just show people how it works and how they can become involved in taking back power, doing it by citizen action, and just use an example of one of the recent articles that we wrote and why that article is important and how it helps them and why they should read it, and then how they could share that with other people and what people have done just with one single issue that impacts everybody listening.
Yeah, we're speaking about the article when we had the two guests on, the professor, chemist from Arthur Little, and Dr. Seneff from MIT, who managed to get their hands on the 15,000 pages of documents of Monsanto's filing, their scientific papers for the filing of the Roundup glyphosate pesticide. For regulatory approval through the EPA and the USDA, and that was a cutting edge article and interview that was done on your program, and broadcast on live on PRN, because it clearly presented something new. It was an exclusive piece, and that's what made it so important. That article, by estimate account, has probably reached about 50,000 different websites, and that included, I saw, in Poland, in the Polish Gazette, which has just recently banned GMOs, Sri Lanka, which has also now put a ban on GMOs. It was in Nigeria. GM Watch had, which is probably the largest watchdog clearinghouse of information on GMOs, has a huge network. So that was, it was obviously distributed throughout all the little grassroots farmer movements, organic farmers, traditional farmer organizations in the developing countries, Latin America, Africa, Southeast Asia. So it's this kind of information that we have to get out. Unfortunately, these are not the kind of articles you can just bang out very quickly. We put in a lot of research and efforts into these articles that could take some time for a good standing alone piece that is really providing something new over and beyond just the short articles that you find on the internet and that people can crank out on a daily basis. I was just thinking, because we have a guest coming up who's going to be speaking on a very important topic, but it related to that is also, if you look at some of the, for example, the radical Christian right, how they inform their people follow it based on false information and distorted interpretations of the Bible, but it galvanizes them to then act. And you can see how powerful these churches, their organizations, their grassroots groups in people's homes, through the churches, their own media. This is all based on information, regardless of how distorted and perverted it might be. But they consume that information, and that is the information which then enables them to act. And we're trying, and what we're advocating is that our listeners try to do the same. With the progressive information that we provide, and other news outlets and blogs and authors and writers who are aligned with our mission and our goal, and only when you become informed in this and in the real issues and can look at it more objectively and kind of put aside the any political biases that you might have or any kind of partisanship towards one party or another, but really look at it within the greater global context, and particularly from our standpoint that has a spiritual, ethical, and moral dimension, because we try to look at all people as equal with the equal rights, whether regardless of your race, your gender, your color, your sexual preference, your nationality. And if you can keep those values and goals in mind and then receive this information, review it, it'll motivate you to act.
Empowering people, that's what we want to do. And we have Gerald Salonte, Ralph Nader, Cindy Sheehan, Dr. From Thurman from Columbia, and Paul Craig Roberts. We have almost 2,400 of the world's leading thinkers, activists, doers, progressive people working together, sharing insights, information to engineer peace and prosperity. You do it by informing people, giving them facts, letting them think about it, let it seep into the consciousness, and then act on it. The key is take a step and do something. If you read something that's important to you, share it. If you watch something that's important, share it. The right is very good at sharing. The left is terrible at sharing. The left would rather pass around pencils and stab each other's eyes out than they would share positive information that could cause something constructive to happen. We've got to get by all this left-right nonsense. I thank you for that. Jason, now, just to give an idea, because a lot of people would say, well, who cares? You know, who cares? Tell them how many people cared enough over the documentaries just today. We're talking about today. Give us the Google search results of just for the documentaries.
Seeds of Death today, 30,500,000. We have The War on Health, 353 million people. We have Knocking on the Devil's Door, 7,700,000. Then Poverty Inc., the newest documentary, 107 million searches. These are people searching today.
How many people watched these just on our own website collectively just recently?
With all, Seeds of Death had over 2,500,000. We had over 800,000 on War and Health. 1,200,000 Knocking on the Devil's Door. Poverty Inc. just came out.
Got about almost 5 million people recently watching the full documentaries.
Full free documentaries on YouTube.
And plus all these hundreds of millions of people searching. Then how many people came to just Facebook alone in the last year?
Give me the last 12 months. We had over 244 million people come and search articles, podcasts, your movies. Great stuff from progressive minds all over the world.
What we're showing is we have refused all interviews, all advertising, and all promotion.
100%.
100% pure, the people informing each other. This is people power at the grassroots level. That's under the radar. And
yes,
look
sir.
At how many hundreds of millions of reference points you have there. 50,000 different sites, including The Economist.
Oh, and The Economist, right.
Yeah,
right.
Which is very respected. We've had all these sites, and then from there you have millions of people reading an article, becoming aware of it that didn't, and therefore saying, why should I eat genetically engineered food? It shows me that they hid all the bad science. Here's all these laboratory animals having these diseases and cancers. Do I want to have my kid to eat baby food made with genetically? No. You never know how good information can impact someone.
It's changing lives, Gary.
It really is changing lives.
It really is.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Two people making a difference, and I just wanted to let people know what we do every day, 24/7, to get people information, and we are pumping it out all the time. Here's something I thought you'd like to hear. This is about a person making a statement about it's about the Bible thumping. You've heard a lot of people thumping the Bible and using the Bible in their campaigns, the GOP candidates. Here's 90 seconds of response to that.
Check this out.
My name is John Fugelsang. I'm a political comedian, an actor, and a writer, and I'm the child of two ex-clergy. I come from an abnormally Christian background, an abnormally Catholic background. We used to have open casket reunions. My mother is an ex-nun, and my father is an ex-Franciscan brother, so I grew up admiring Jesus the way anybody admires mom's first husband, but I've come to view Jesus in much the way I've come to view Elvis. I love the guy. The fan clubs scare me. And I'm glad we're talking about Jesus and the GOP candidates today because we hear them all talking about Jesus all the time. They invoke his name incessantly. He's like a mascot holding pom-poms on the sidelines. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could find a way to get Jesus of Nazareth to come back and run for president on the GOP ticket? They can't pick a front runner anyway. So wouldn't the GOP love to get behind a guy who was a peaceful, radical, nonviolent revolutionary who hung around with lepers, hookers, and criminals, who never spoke English, was not an American citizen, a man who was anti-capitalism, anti-wealth, anti-public prayer, yes, he was, Matthew 6:5, anti-death penalty, but never once remotely anti-gay, didn't mention abortion, didn't mention premarital sex, a man who never justified torture, who never called the poor lazy, who never asked a leper for a copay, who never fought for tax cuts for the wealthiest Nazarenes, and was a long-haired, brown-skinned, that's in Revelations, homeless Middle Eastern Jew. Of course, that's only if you believe what's actually in the Bible.
Let's go to our guest standing by, Mickey Weinstein from New Mexico. Nice to have you with us today, Mickey.
Actually, it's Mikey, but thank you very much.
Oh, sorry. Since the Bush administration's invasions into Afghanistan and Iraq and the national call for a war against terrorism, there's been a concerted effort by the radio right wing of American Christian and evangelical churches and organizations to Christianize the U.S. military, to Christianize our war efforts. And over the years, we've seen many acts of Christian military personnel demeaning and demoralizing members of other religions, such as the burning of the Quran. But first, briefly summarize what the constitutional law states and military regulations regarding personal religious beliefs in the military services. And the second, what do the regulations condone and what do they prohibit in the way of servicemen expressing their religious faith?
Well, you're asking an awful lot. That's a huge area. Let me start off with this. Our foundation currently represents over 42,700 active duty United States Marines, sailors, soldiers, and airmen, cadets and midshipmen at West Point, and then my alma mater and the alma mater of four of my kids, the Air Force Academy and Annapolis, my father's alma mater, National Guard, Reserve, and veterans. About 96% of our clients are practicing Christians that are being persecuted, Gary, for not being, if you will, Christian enough. We represent about 13.5% of all Muslim Americans in the U.S. military, and we represent 911 LGBT members of the U.S. military. The first thing that your listeners need to understand is that the military is a very, very different environment than the civilian world. It's been described as extraordinarily adversarial, Gary, communal, ritualistic, and tribal. There is a 1974 Supreme Court case that was written by, you know, that noted liberal, you know, wink, wink, just William Rehnquist, the 6-2 decision, so somebody abstained, called Parker versus Levy, in which the Supreme Court made it clear that when you join the U.S. military, many of your constitutional rights are going to be severely abridged because the compelling governmental interest in the military is to ensure the lethality of our military to protect the full panoply of constitutional rights, Gary, for the rest of us. And that means, how do we do that? Well, the blood, the sinew, the bone, the veins, you know, the tissue of our military, the muscle, is maximizing good order, morale, discipline, health and safety of the troops, unit cohesion, military readiness and mission accomplishment. And that means that's why in the military we have its own separate criminal code, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, where if you commit adultery, that is a felony, can be prosecuted as a felony. If you fail to follow an order to go to the base dentist, you know, at 3 or 4 p.m. or 1500 or 1600, that can constitute a felony. So there are many directives, instructions, and regulations that make it very clear that, you know, you have the right to confidently practice your faith, but it cannot deleteriously impact good order, morale, discipline, and unit cohesion. Today's United States military, the wall separating church and state, physical and metaphysical, temporal and spiritual, is nothing, I'm sad to report to you today, but smoke and debris. There is a fascistic contagion of fundamentalist Christian supremacy and triumphalism and exceptionalism and extremism that is not an issue or a problem or challenge. We're not talking about any of those three things on your nice, excellent show today. It is a metastasizing internal national security threat, you know, again, internally to our country, every bit as much as what we're facing externally by a resurgent Taliban and Al-Qaeda and, of course, ISIS, the Mujahideen, and the other terrorists that are out there.
How much has fundamentalist Christian views infiltrated the higher military ranks, and how prevalent is it within the military's academies and military schools to train soldiers and sailors in special skills?
Do you happen to have a pen or a pencil near you right now?
I do not, sorry.
Do you have any sort of an object?
No.
Well, I was going to try to make a point. Do you have a paper clip or are you wearing a watch? I'm going somewhere with this and answering your question.
I will take off a little energy wristband I have, so I'm holding it in my hand.
All right. Would you please hold that 6 inches over some sort of a surface, Gary, and would you drop it?
Okay. Just dropped it.
All right. What force made that thing drop?
The force, the weight of the object itself against gravity.
Gravity. That is exactly how ubiquitous and inextricably intertwined into the very DNA of the technologically most lethal organization ever created by Homo sapiens, which is our U.S. military. That is how badly we have been infiltrated and inundated by fundamentalist Christianity. As I mentioned, most of, you know, we have 244 people that work in our foundation, and as you know, represent nearly 43,000 troops. And most of them are being castigated, as I said, for not being Christian enough. Of course, we have many Jews, Muslims, Hindus, Baha'is, atheists, agnostics, humanists, and secularists. But that is, to answer your question, that is how bad it is. It's in the very air conditioning of the Pentagon, which we now refer to as the Pentecostal God.
How we know that there is anti-Muslim sentiments in the U.S. military ranks. How strong are anti-Semitic views or the views towards atheists or Buddhists who don't believe in a supreme being? And can you provide some examples of how military personnel have retaliated against servicemen or women who don't espouse these radical Christian beliefs?
Well, look, I mean, one of our worst days was the attack on Benghazi. One of the two Navy SEALs killed in that attack was my good friend and our long-term advisory board member, former Navy SEAL Glenn Doherty, an Irish Catholic kid from Boston. We've had 13 of our clients KIA downrange in Iraq and Afghanistan. We always have a collection of about a dozen that are on the verge of suicide. We've had a number that have committed suicide. Your careers have been ruined, PTSD has been caused, members who refuse to yield to this fundamentalist Christian supremacy have been denied advancement in the military. They've been denigrated. They've been persecuted. I've submitted testimony twice before the U.S. Congress, specifically on the denigration and humiliation of multiple members of the U.S. military. I testified about 10 months ago before the House Armed Services Committee. Only one Democrat deigned to show up. The rest was a typical Potemkin village of a fundamentalist Christian, outrageous and scandalous tyranny as we sat there in the largest hearing room in the Cannon House office building. So the answer is that anything you can imagine literally has happened. I mean, the denigration, the humiliation, the dehumanization, the marginalization is unbelievable. And in the military, you can destroy someone's career by writing a performance evaluation that otherwise would make them, the average American would say, boy, it looks like pun intended here, Gary, but it looks like you're walking on water. But by changing the word A to the, or changing from the pluperfect to the present or past tense in a performance evaluation, you're done. Being told to take point as you go into a village in Afghanistan or in the most dangerous position. We've had everything that can possibly happen. We currently, and the only way to fight this is very aggressively and militantly. Our aggression and militancy is in support of the U.S. Constitution, but we are very aggressive and very militant. And that's the only way to fight this. And I think the great statement by that was once stated that, power concedes nothing without a demand. So our job here at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, Gary, and for those wondering, please go to militaryreligiousfreedom.org. It'll blow your minds. Is to be the demanders of the commanders. It was Frederick Douglass that made that statement. Power concedes nothing without a demand. But I ask anyone in your audience, and I bet in this audience there are a lot of people would raise their hands, in their lifetimes, how many people listening to this show today have ever even once spoken truth to power? I mean, to a coach, to a parent, to a boss, to someone that could harm you. It's very hard to, because normally you turn yourself into a tarantula on a wedding cake when you do that. And we live in a country where today people are afraid to tell someone else to shut up if they're talking in a movie theater. So that's what we're dealing with. And it's to have the temerity to stand up for your civil rights, and they are rights, they are not privileges, you get them even if you're a jerk, is very hard to do. So our job is to provide AARP for our clients, which is anonymity, action, results, and protection, not the other AARP. And it's hard to do that. That's why shows such as yours are so vitally important to the national interest and, frankly, to the national security.
Mikey, I appreciate the good work that the Military Religious Freedom.org Foundation is doing. The book is With God on Our Side, One Man's War Against the Evangelical Coup in America's Military. My final thought is, one of my deep concerns is that young adults can go into the military without any strong religious beliefs and then become indoctrinated into this distorted view of Christian exceptionalism that seems to be combined with an equally distorted view of American exceptionalism with respect to the international community of nations. And this then defines a new kind of patriot, one on steroids, with no moral boundary that they will not exceed in order to show that their God, their beliefs are the right ones, and therefore a lot of destruction happens to innocent people. We see it every day. And these soldiers then return to the civilian world where they can be equally dangerous, and And for example, this weekend, anti-Muslim conservative groups are planning 20 rallies at Muslim mosques across America. And this is being called the Global Rally for Humanity. And demonstrators are being asked to bring their weapons. I would not doubt that many of the people who will be attending these rallies are veterans of the Iraq and Afghan campaigns. And I don't want to see any more of this violence. And I don't want to see the people running our government, running our military industrial complex and our defense complex and these other complexes, using their justification based upon their moral exceptionalism. And that's an extreme form of religious fundamentalism. So you're a voice out there, a very important voice, saying we will be here to defend your rights. Thank you very much, Mikey, for doing that.
I appreciate it. And again, anyone who wants to try to understand what Gary's talked about or I've talked about today, our website is militaryreligiousfreedom.org. We're a civil rights charity, and if you want to help help us fight this, please understand first what's going on. You have to know what's happening before you can make a decision, as you mentioned earlier, for an option as to what you want to do. But don't sit back and do nothing. That is something that, as you mentioned, that ancient Athenian, forget his name, turned into a crime. It should be a crime today also.
We agree. Thank you. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.
Evening shadow.